Peace of Mind is a conversation about mental health issues in our community. It is not a replacement for treatment. Kyle and Angie are not clinicians, and their discussions do not constitute a medical opinion or diagnosis. If you feel the need to speak with someone about your or your family's mental health, please contact a doctor. Or for more information about mental health providers, or if you need more urgent help, call Helpline at 1-800-684-2324. And of course, please dial 911 in case of an emergency.
Humans have almost always been military obsessed. From King Arthur's Round Table to G.I. Joe, we've all embraced this notion of the bravest and most noble members of society stepping to the precipice of danger to protect us and our way of life. We talk up the honor, the courage, the responsibility, and the selflessness. The few, the proud, the army strong, the ones who fly, fight, and win, those who are forged by the sea, and those who are born ready. The way we stand and clap in the airport when a sea of camouflage comes through, or how we always make sure to say thank you for your service. But do we truly appreciate the men and women who have served our military? Veterans can get the best parking spot at Lowe's and Home Depot, and there's usually a 10% discount wherever you go. Wear your uniform in a restaurant, and you can almost guarantee you will not pay for that meal. Of course, these are very nice and thoughtful gestures, but a prime parking spot doesn't do much to combat the estimate that 25% of our active duty troops suffer from a diagnosed mental illness. Even worse are the numbers concerning anxiety, PTSD, depression, and suicidal ideation among veterans. The truth is that serving in the military can give you all those things they talk about in the commercials. A sense of pride, of belonging, camaraderie, a feeling that you have earned your stripes and made life better for your fellow Americans. But there's a darker side to service. It includes survivor's guilt, the loss of meaning in everyday civilian life, reliving horrific moments every time you hear fireworks, or standing by while you and your colleagues become political fodder between two parties who love paying lip service to veterans, but never really seem to do enough to actually make things better. We're talking today with some locals who are actually working on the mental health crisis with our armed forces. Boots on the ground in the battle after the battle. I'm Kyle Lewis. I'm joined, as always, by Angie Lee, and this is Peace of Mind, a conversation about mental health, wellness, and the never-ending quest to feel okay. Good morning, and welcome to Peace of Mind. My name's Kyle Lewis. I am the Communications Director for the Delaware Morrow Mental Health and Recovery Services Board, and I'm joined, as always, by Angie Lee. Angie, good morning.
Good morning, everyone. Angie Lee, Executive Director of Safe Harbor.
We are joined today by two fantastic people who are working on the very problem that we discussed in the show opening, the mental health and care of veterans. We have Danny Akins from the Ohio Department of Veterans Services. Danny, thanks for joining us.
Hello, Kyle. Thank you.
And we also have Sarah Lee Jefferson from Helpline and the Delaware Suicide Prevention Coalition. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me today.
So we're going to get into this more down the line, but, you know, Danny, as an Army veteran, can you talk a little bit about the feeling that comes after you're done serving? You get that, you know, in the Air Force, well, I guess it was the Department of Defense, you get that 214 that says you're no longer in service and thank you for everything you've done. Then what? What is that feeling? Because you go from this job, this career with all kinds of purpose and a very set direction, and now you're just back into regular society. What was that change like for you?
That's an excellent question, Kyle. I talk about this often. I in my job, I work a lot in behavioral health and am the state team leader for the National Governor's Challenge to Prevent Suicide Among Service Members, Veterans, and Families. And I often talk about that I was separated from active duty within a couple of months of returning from my deployment to Iraq in 2005, separated early in 2006. And I often talk about the bus ride. Once our plane from overseas landed in Kansas, and we took charter buses back to Fort Riley, Kansas, to meet our families at the hangar, and I often talk about how quiet that bus ride was. As excited as everybody was when we first left Iraq, that bus ride was super quiet as everyone kind of reflected on, gosh, now I have to think about what's next. Mm-hmm. And for me, began to feel like a very empty feeling already. I had the feeling that as a as a platoon leader overseas in Iraq, I felt like I was doing the work, you know, for lack of a better term, that I was born to do.
Sure.
And
sure.
So now that was all coming to an end, and I really had no plan for what I was going to do next. And it created a lot of emptiness and anxiety. And I've always noted that, obviously, there were people taking pictures everywhere at the hangar when we met with our families. And I've noticed that the look on my face in those photos is not one of happiness and joy. It's one of anxiety and a lot of uncertainty. I'll be quite frank with you. As a platoon leader, I kind of just assumed that I'd be killed overseas.
Sure.
You know, I was the type of person that would walk up on roadside bombs and things like that to see if it was a bomb or not. And I know I put my platoon sergeant through a lot of anxiety. And so I never really made a plan for what was next because I just assumed there wasn't a next. And so now all of a sudden being faced with it, it was a lot of uncertainty and a lot of anxiety. And I really had no idea what was going to come next, and which had a lot of consequences once I did return to Ohio.
Yeah, you mentioned something there of which I think is kind of at the heart of a lot of the issues that we see with service members trying to reintegrate into society, where you had just had it in your head that this was how you were going to go. And I remember reading in the book Band of Brothers by Stephen Ambrose about Easy Company in World War II. It was really, really good miniseries on HBO, very famous. But he talks about the progression that the soldiers on the front lines would go through, where you start out and you don't think that anything bad is going to happen to you. You know, you think, oh, okay, I'm going to get through this, and then there's something else to do. And then you start to see some of the horrors of war, and the second phase is, I am terrified that something is going to happen to me. And, you know, it makes it hard to do your job. And then you reach this sort of closure with it of, I'm already dead, and whatever I can do in the meantime is, whatever I can do in the meantime is, you know, my service. And you think about how you do what you got to do to get your job done, which is the core of service. But what impact does that have, taking that mindset, when you don't die and you come back and now you have to reintegrate into a civilian world? You have to, you know, be a mother. You have to be a father. You have to be, you know, an accountant, or, you know, somebody, a police officer. So, I think those the problems that come with the evolution that you go through of that trauma is a big reason why we need things like the Department of Veteran Services.
Yeah, I think, and the idea is to try to, I will say, like, over time, what we've seen through the creation of departments like ours. So our department's relatively new on the scene, having been created in 2008. The Department of Veterans Affairs on the federal level has actually been around since the 1800s, essentially created actually kind of during the Civil War by President Lincoln, and then kind of expanded by subsequent administrations into what it is today. And I will say that, you know, even the creation of our department and a lot of the policies we've tried to work on a statewide basis that I worked with Angie on a lot of them in relation to higher education benefits. I would argue that the state of Ohio has probably the nation's best state education system for veterans in the country. You know, college credit for, you know, military experience, in-state tuition, you know, support on campus, those kinds of things. But a lot of our effort has been focused on smoothing out that transition once they're back here in Ohio. I will tell you, we've also advanced it to where we're working with our other state partners, other veterans organizations, and other interests to essentially try to influence the Department of Defense to do better, influence law at a national level, and requirements in terms of what the military, the armed forces do prior to separation. And I would tell you, we're also... the VA actually now, the federal VA, now works on a program called Solid Start, where upon someone's enlistment with the military, they begin to connect with them. And that's something that we in Ohio have also tried to do through our we've initiated many programs related to kind of connecting with military kids, the children of military members in our elementary and primary schools. We've kind of moved that forward with the Purple Star School Program to kind of recognize those school districts that do a high level of support for the children of military and veteran families. That's also led to things like military signing ceremonies for high school students who enlist in the military, that also gives us an opportunity to connect with them as they go in so that they have a better understanding of the support and resources that will be available to them on the way out. But that's been a huge, and I will tell you in terms of the work I do at the department, my transition from active duty has been a very massive influence because it was traumatic. I ended up getting divorced and it, you know, kind of changed the trajectory of my life. I was fortunate to have the opportunity to come in and start working on behalf of veterans and also opportunities to connect with things like therapy. I see the same therapist now that I started seeing 14 years ago. So have had that opportunity.
That's fantastic. So we were talking a little bit before the show, talking about my service. I did 2 years active duty in the United States Air Force and then transitioned into National Guard status. The most traumatic experience that I had when I was in the Air Force was my fifth week of basic training when September 11th hit. And I bring that up because, you know, Angie and I sit and we talk about which shows we want to do. What are some of the pressing issues? What are the problems that we're seeing? And we had a show dedicated to veterans, probably somewhere scheduled in like September, October, you know, possibly pushing into, you know, November, getting close to Veterans Day. But after seeing the way that Americans and veterans specifically have been reacting to what's going on in Afghanistan, we really figured that it's never going to be more timely to push this up because it's almost something that I don't think people can. I think people can understand, you know, you come home from a battle situation and loud noises, you know, send you back into flashbacks, or you have trouble sleeping, or, you know, you seek some sort of relief in alcohol or drugs. But what I've talked to what I've heard from the veterans that I've talked to who served in Afghanistan, and, you know, keep in mind, this is a 20-year conflict. There are soldiers over there right now, fresh boots on the ground, who were not alive, had not been born yet when the key event, September 11th, happened. So that's almost unheard of for the United States. And to see the work that they've done, which it wasn't just defeating the Taliban, it was helping build an infrastructure there, helping the Afghani government get it on its feet, helping build the military. I heard a story about soldiers helping Afghani farmers learn how to grow potatoes, which helped feed the entire country. Seeing all that come undone almost immediately, and it becomes a political argument, even though we've seen two Republican presidents and two Democratic presidents oversee this war. So it gets boiled down like everything else to, well, what we should do is, and then a one sentence answer, which is never the solution, especially for, you know, a land that has been mired in conflict since, you know, long before the U.S. was even a country. So what are you seeing from your contacts and from, you know, your fellow veterans who have been watching all of this unfold on the news?
I'd say a range of emotions. You know, myself, I didn't serve in Afghanistan. I served in Iraq, but I did enlist in the Army. I was already out of college and working and enlisted after the 9/11 attacks, specifically to serve in that conflict. And I feel like at the time I kind of enlisted with the same attitude that you always hear from previous generations, that I'm serving so that the next generation won't have to. And as you stated, in this case, the next generation has had to. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you've had easily two or three generations of service members roll through this conflict. I would say the reactions to it are as varied as the individuals, you know, who have experienced it. And so, you know, I have friends who served in Afghanistan. I've lost friends in Afghanistan. I've seen a wide range of reactions on, I'm not much on social media. I'm still, you know, but mostly LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And I will say, though, that in my personal reaction to it, what I tried to do was communicate to folks that, one, it's not the place of any one of us to tell others how they should feel about it. Two, that that there may be impacts on people that we may not realize.
Sure.
Everybody knows, okay, yeah, veterans of this era. There may be impacts on Vietnam veterans who see in the images out of Kabul traumatic reliving of what they saw in places like Saigon.
The helicopters, the
aircraft, the Gold Star families, yes. Who have lost folks, Blue Star families, and obviously community members who have friends and loved ones, and even Afghan refugees and others that live in our community that this really impacts them. And so, in communicating to my friends, at least in terms of trying to express how I felt, I said, I'm sure many of you want to help as well. And so here are some resources that you can share with people you know that can assist them with their behavioral health needs. And also, in the case here in Central Ohio, I shared information about Community Refugee and Immigration Services, which is a local organization that has dispatched a team to Fort Lee, Virginia, to begin facilitating bringing Afghan special immigrant visa recipients to Columbus in Central Ohio. And actually, in one case, I know of a person who was a resident here in Central Ohio, was born in Afghanistan. She enlisted and became an officer in the U.S. Air Force, now lives in Central Ohio and is obviously working very hard to try to help bring people to Central Ohio. So I think that's kind of the thing, is show people where they can find help for themselves, but then also give them the resources and empower them to provide help where they can.
So I have to send out some apologies here to Angie and Sarah, because as every conversation that I've been in that involves two veterans and people who were not veterans, the veterans have completely taken over the conversation. So thank you guys for sitting tight. Sarah, I would like to bring you in here. It's been a pretty big trend on social media for a long time here, talking about 22 veterans a day committing suicide or completing suicide. And, whether you want to dispute the numbers or say whatever it is, people are trying to bring a lot of awareness to it. And just curious, from your work, what specific challenges have you seen working both with Helpline and with the Suicide Prevention Coalition? What have you seen from veterans specifically? Like, what unique problems are they facing that, make it so hard when they get back into the real world here?
I don't really have direct experience working with veterans, but as far as talking about just kind of the population where they're told to be tough and that, that you can just suck this up and deal with it. And that's kind of the mentality that I noticed. A lot of people will provide the resources, will tell them it's okay to feel this way, it's okay to not be okay, but then they still have that kind of inkling in the back of their head that they need to just kind of handle this on their own. And that's one of the biggest problems that I've seen.
And I've seen a lot of that. I would say more specifically with Army and Marine, former Army soldiers, former Marines, it's that thought of being the weak one in the phalanx. It's if you drop your guard for a second, you can put the whole squadron at risk. So it's suck it up. And, we see it in athletics too. There are times when you do have to suck it up and keep going, but that mentality doesn't do much for your mental health when you're not in those situations where you have to suck it up anymore.
And honestly, I think getting help is the strongest thing you can do. That takes a lot of strength to actually get yourself the help that you need and realizing that you can't do it all on your own.
So we've talked a lot about the problems that veterans face, and I would love to turn the microphones over to you guys here and, let's hear about some of the programs that are there to help. I know you both have a lot to say about this.
Take the lead.
Sure. Well, thank you, Sarah. And there's a couple of resources I'd definitely like to highlight. One in particular, especially in response to the situation in Afghanistan, I will say the federal VA has been very proactive in pushing out resources and information to help veterans and the people who care for them. A great place to go for that information is literally at blogs.va.gov. And that's where they have posted, if you go to that website, they've posted specific sections on addressing Afghanistan. Other key resources, especially here in Ohio, that I like to direct people to, the Ohio National Guard actually maintains a very informative website called Ohio Cares. It's ohiocares.ohio.gov. On that website, they have information on where you can go to like a resource map and see exactly where your local behavioral health board is to contact them to be able to get connected to resources, your local county veteran service office, connections to the STAR Provider Registry, which is another important resource here in Ohio, where we've worked with partners like the Brain Injury Program, Ohio Department of Mental Health, the National Guard, and the VA to provide training to local providers, not necessarily VA providers, but local counselors, therapists, to give them some level of cultural competency training in what veterans in the military folks experience. And I think to date, there's, I think, more than 400 people on that registry that have received some level of that culture training. That can also be found at starproviders.org. Another important resource and key partner, so Ohio in the last 2 years has for the first time embarked on developing a statewide suicide prevention plan. And that effort has been led by the Ohio Suicide Prevention Foundation, and they have made veterans a key priority population to support in terms of resources and capabilities. And Jason Hughes is a tremendous colleague of mine, retired. I think he's up here in Delaware County, actually, retired Army National Guard, and is the veteran liaison for the Ohio Suicide Prevention Foundation, my co-lead on the governor's challenge to prevent suicide. And they have resources at ohiospf.org that are just tremendous. And the work being done to create what we call a more veteran-informed system, because we understand not everybody may want to turn to the VA. There are extensive VA facilities in Ohio. No veteran is more than a county away from a federal VA outpatient clinic or medical center. So there are tremendous resources, but not everybody will turn to them. So we want to help communities, faith-based communities, local behavioral health boards, local providers, help empower them to feel like they can be a resource to the veterans and families in their community.
I'm glad you mentioned that not everyone may want to reach out to them, because another resource that's available to just the general public, especially if you're trying to help someone who is a veteran, you can always reach Helpline. You can call us 24/7, 7 days a week. You can text Helpline to 898-211, or you can call 1-800-684-2324. And then on 9/11 this year, we actually are having the 10-year anniversary. It was supposed to be last year, and sadly, because of COVID, we weren't able to have it. So this year we are hoping to have more than 300 people show up, and it's going to be at OWU's campus on the Jaywalk, and that'll be rain or shine, so come prepared for inclement weather. And you can register at Get Connected, which is connections.galaxydigital.com, and you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/DSPCWalk. And I do want to shout out to all of our amazing sponsors who are making the walk possible. So that's the Delaware and Morrow Mental Health and Recovery Services Board, Helpline, Larry Coolidge, and Amber Herbster. So thank you for your sponsorship. And we are going to have shirts and bags that we're going to pass out for free. Those are first come and first serve, so we hope that you can make it for the 10-year anniversary walk.
Wonderful. Angie, I know Safe Harbor probably has some wonderful programs that you'd like to talk about.
Yeah, we actually do. And I want to thank Danny, because one of the things I noticed since I began working at Safe Harbor is we did have a veteran population. Mm-hmm. It wasn't something that we had originally tracked. And Danny knows that veterans are very near and dear to my heart, even though I've never served. Very passionate about helping the veteran population. So we made some connections, and we actually now serve on the Delaware County Veterans Wellness Court, providing a lot of support there. And as kind of everyone's mentioned here today, you know, sometimes people aren't necessarily ready for that support, and that's where we can also come in. Where, again, we can provide that non-judgmental, we're not clinical, you know, to be able to help be that bridge and really support them until they're actually ready. But there are other veterans amongst them who understand and have experienced, a lot of what they that they went through. And the one thing I want to say is I want to send a challenge out there to everyone who's that non-veteran, because we've talked a lot about veterans and the resources. And much like we've talked on other shows about the stigma and going back to the got to be tough, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You know, for all of us who have not served, please do not assume when someone serves or they get out of the service that they're okay. That, hey, you know what? They're tough. They've got all these skills and all this training. And so they should be able to, you know, get a job like that and they shouldn't have any problems. You know, that's all great on paper, but that's not reality and that's not life. And so that's why it's so important for us to really, you know, look at and begin recognizing some of those, I guess, signs and symptoms and asking people again, are you okay? Mm-hmm. What can I do to help? And not in a judgmental way, or are you okay? Yeah, I'm doing fine. No, wait a minute. Are you really doing fine?
Right.
You know, again, what this show is about is having the conversation with people. And it may not be easy. And the other thing I will say is, you know, if I said to Danny, how are you doing? And I can tell physically he may not, but he says, I'm fine. I don't want to walk away and never come back to that question again. It might take a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we need to do from people who have not served, is support these individuals and get away from that stigma.
So how can people get in touch with Safe Harbor to have these conversations?
So people can get in touch with me at our main number, which is 1-740-363-1619, or you can visit our website at Safe Harbor Peer Support Services. And we have two locations, one here in Delaware County and the other one here in Morrow County.
So we want to thank our guests today, Danny Akins and Sarah Lee Jefferson. It's been a fantastic conversation, and I hope it's helped a lot of people. To the veterans out there, thank you so much for your service and your sacrifice. And please, if you need to talk to somebody, there is an endless amount of help out there for you. Again, I'm with the Delaware Morrow Mental Health Recovery Services Board. If you want a look at our providers, you can either give us a call at 740-368-1740 or check us out online at dmmhrsb.org. For Angie Lee, I'm Kyle Lewis. This is Peace of Mind every Saturday, 8:30 a.m. on Classic Rock 95X or 9:30 a.m. here in Delaware on My 96.7. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you.